Blog Talk Radio.
Show today, but on this Cowboy 90-minute Monday, Memorial Day month, as you we have the Memorial Day soldier tribute clip going on in the background. Say thank you to everybody out there who did service, who has lost perhaps a loved one, who has lost their lives themselves. We just want to say thank you for allowing us to have this kind of freedom and allow Justin and I to do this type of broadcast. So again, thank you very much, and we figured that today, on the holiday, the one not broadcast the Dallas Cowboys on this 90-minute Monday on Cowboys Talk Live. Again, I am Chris McQuiggan. This is Dustin Bork here along with me as well. Dustin, how are you doing today?
Doing good.
So we are going to turn that off a little bit. It's a little bit depressing, but hey, it's kind of a depressing holiday a little bit, despite the nice weather. We have a lot of great topics to go over today. We got our normal four topics that we do. We also have this week's edition of Star or Not, so stay tuned for that as we will get right into that right after, within the last 10 minutes of the broadcast. But the first one, Dustin, is veteran running backs coming in to visit. Two names that Dallas Cowboy fans may know. One of them they definitely know, and that is Felix Jones. Also, Ben Tate came in for workouts. To me, the way I looked at this is I was screaming at my screen during the draft, why aren't we taking a running back? We passed on three of them that were opportunities and possibilities. But, you know, maybe the Joneses have a little plan up their sleeve here. Maybe they bring in a veteran 1-2 punch and then leave either Randall, Dunbar, or Williams to be perhaps that third-string transition back. I mean, it could be a possibility.
Yeah, I agree with you. I feel like I don't know how I feel about the whole Felix Jones thing, but as far as you know, which running backs we have coming in between, you know, Felix Jones, Ben Tate, I don't know. I would be more exciting if we had like Ray Rice coming in. I feel like it's almost like we got scraps showing up. We already been there, done that with Felix Jones, and it hasn't really worked out. As far as, you know, Ben Tate,
well,
goes,
we
know
this offensive line with Jones.
Yeah, I all right. I mean, I'll give you that one as far as that goes. But, you know, with the whole best offensive line in football, we just picked up Darren McFadden, and you know, we have the speed. I just feel like I like Darren McFadden. I like his 40 time. I think he's lightning fast. I really want to see what he could do, you know, with that number one running back role. I understand it didn't really work out in Oakland, and the injuries are a concern, but I guess he could call it, you know, what it is and say that I'm sold on the whole, you know, PR thing, that this is his, you know, second shot, and he wants to really make a career here in Dallas. I want to give Darren McFadden a solid shot at the number one spot. I'm not sure that the running back by committee thing is going to work. I don't know what you think.
Well, I mean, yes and no. I feel that the Dallas Cowboys will be okay either way. I mean, yeah, I want a veteran name in there. McFadden, sure, could work out. But to get a guy like Ben Tate, who's a grinder, Ben Tate is going to lower the shoulder and get you, you know, he's going to get you that extra yard, 2 yards on third and two. He's going to be the closest thing to DeMarco Murray, that, at least that they've seen since he left. You know, he's got a little bit of power. He's got some speed. He hasn't really had the career that everyone thought he was going to have because he was behind Arian Foster in Houston. But, you know, and then he went to a terrible Browns team. But, I mean, I think that Ben Tate would be huge. But to be honest with you, I don't necessarily know if I wanted that power game. I think with McFadden, I think he could actually complement, because McFadden does have a little bit of lower-the-shoulder capability, a little bit. I would like to see, and I haven't read anything about him on any of the websites or any of the blogs or anything, but the one guy who I would like to see come in, and he's already said, hey, you know, Mr. J, holler at me, in his own words, was Chris Johnson, who I think Johnson, you know, when he was in Tennessee was absolutely sensational. And I think he would really provide a spark for Dallas. Then if you give it to him, let him be the speed guy. Let him be the speed back to sort of blaze by defenses. Then you give McFadden, who also has that speed, a little bit more of a limited role to keep him healthy, because remember, McFadden has some injury issues. I think that might be cool. I haven't heard anything about him yet coming in. Ray Rice obviously would be ideal. He has a combination of both power and speed. But overall, I mean, I think that we're going to have to just choke it down and live with it. The running back by committee thing is what they're going to do. I don't think they're going to have a feature back that they're going to give, you know, 423 carries or whatever it was to. I think that they're going to do that whole, you know, give the ball to whoever and split it three ways. And that, to me, may work because, I mean, Murray worked, sure, but now we're sort of reaping what we sow a little bit with DeMarco Murray. We are sort of now expected to be a power run team. And, you know, when you look at some of, who was his name there, Randall, when he wasn't stealing cologne and underwear, when he played last year, like the game that sticks out to me was the last game of the regular season against Washington. He's got some blazing speed, but he can break tackles too. And Dunbar, we know, can catch passes out of the backfield. So I'm excited for whoever they bring in. I mean, I like what we have, but if we can bring in a veteran too, that would be just – I would be like a little kid in a candy store on Christmas. That would be really, really satisfying for me.
Yeah, I mean, so you bring up a lot of valid points. Let's look at Jones and Tate for a sec. Okay, so we got two guys who are entering the sixth
Chris
season.
Jones.
What's that?
Are you talking Felix or Chris Jones?
No, we're talking Felix and we're talking
okay.
Ben Tate. We're doing veteran running backs. So Felix
Jones,
sixth season,
okay.
He's 28 years old, okay? You got Ben Tate, who's a sixth season guy, he's 26. So we got, you know, 2 years younger, a guy who really hasn't had to carry a team. Now, last season, he was split with the Browns and the Vikings. He had, 119 carries, 371 yards, 4 TDs. We know that he missed out a lot due to injury. He played a combined 11 games. That's it. So before last year, he's literally known as Foster's backup in Houston. Okay, his most productive year was his rookie year in 2011, where he had 940 yards and 4 TDs. So we've yet to see this guy put up a 1,000-yard rushing season. Okay, but I'm taking Tate personally over Felix Jones. Just off of that, 2 years younger, he seems to be – yeah, they're both coming off injuries, but I'm going to take the young legs, you know, coming off the injuries versus the old legs. That's just the way I look at it. Felix Jones, 2010 is his most productive year. He had 800 yards. End of story. His last year played because he was just in the veteran combine, so he sat out a year. He's trying to prove that he's still valuable and he could be an asset to a team. So his last year played was in 2013 for the Steelers, 48 carries, 184 yards, no touchdowns with the Steelers, who are known as a power run team. He couldn't even get in the end zone receiving, nothing. He couldn't even get in the game plan there. Now, obviously, yeah, Le'Veon Bell, I get it, but still, I mean, Felix Jones was brought into the league. I know you remember this, but some people might not. He was drafted very high, and he was a feature back. They called him Felix the Cat because he was lightning fast, and he was supposed to be that, you know, that lightning bolt to Marion Barber's pound right in your face. So we were supposed to be able to switch it up, throw the power run at people, and then all of a sudden throw Felix in and have him go lightning bolt on people. It didn't work out. I don't think we should try to revisit that. It didn't work out. You know, let somebody else give him a shot. I say we move on. We bring Ben Tate in. If we're going to bring anybody in, I'm with you. I'm good with what we got. I think between McFadden and, you know, the kids, you know, the shoplifter, I think we're good. I think running by committee, that's fine. Do I prefer that? No. I would prefer Adrian Peterson. You know, I'd prefer that one big guy with the big name who could just, you know, run for 2,000 yards and just really make you hurt, 20 touchdowns. That's what I want. But if I got to get those kind of numbers through three guys, okay, I guess. But what I'm the most worried about is I feel like all we have is speed. And I understand that speed kills, but, man, if we're one-dimensional with the run game, it's going to make it pretty simple for the defense to game plan against us because they know, all right, why the heck are we going to sit here and, you know, dig deep in the trenches when they're not going to go inside, they're going outside. They're doing pitches every play, screen passes every play. They're going to be, you know, so I just don't want us to be looked at as too one-dimensional. Can Darren McFadden lower his shoulder and go throw people? Yeah, but he's going to break it. You know, it's already been proven. The guy cannot make it through a regular season when he is the main guy. So, I don't know. I guess we brought him in as a run-by-committee type thing. He has lightning-fast speed, which excites me. It's Chris Johnson speed. Like, part of the reason why I think Murray is so good is there were a lot of times last year where DeMarco was running behind blockers, and he literally hit the brakes to let the blocker finish the block, and then he used his great field vision, and he found the hole. So there were a lot of times where the running back couldn't just run as fast as he wanted and find the hole and do the home run touchdown. There are times where awareness and intelligence plays a factor, and it's not just raw speed. And I don't know. I hope we have the whole package, but I'm worried.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I'm not quite as worried in that sense because – I feel like sort of what you were describing may work now because back then we didn't have the pieces in place. Now we've got the pieces in place where, you know, we can hit a screen pass out of the backfield. We can run a draw play up the middle with a speed guy. We can run, you know, for those Madden players out there and halfback dive and just get 2 yards. We can do all sorts of different things that we didn't necessarily have the capability of doing, and then if they stack eight in the box to stop the run, or if they want to contain to the outside to stop, you know, a speed pitch around the outside, Wilmos is going to fake the handoff, throw over the middle to Jason Witten, who we have a great segment on coming up, you know, or hit Cole Beasley in the slot or something. We just have such a dynamic offensive set that I think that getting a little bit of diversity in there in the running game with speed and you know, pass catching ability and different things, I think that we really would be able to be that lightning rod that we haven't been able to be before. Because like you said, and that was a good analogy by you, the lightning rod analogy, because we had it, but we couldn't work it properly. And now I think with Scott Linehan calling the plays, we might be able to do some really fancy, creative stuff that we necessarily couldn't do with Murray. Murray was just a line up, run straight at you, lower the shoulder, break some tackles, and go. Now we've got a little bit of draw play capabilities, some option capabilities. I know you love the option, but we've got a whole bunch of different things that we can do now if we bring in some speed guys. And I do want one power guy. I want like somebody like a Ben Tate. Even Ray Rice has enough power for me. But I definitely think that a guy like McFadden, who runs that 4-2 speed, a guy like Randall, who showed that he can break out, Dunbar can catch passes out of the backfield, guys like that, Chris Johnson, if we do bring him in, if he runs like he ran in Tennessee, could be a Pro Bowler. I honestly feel like the running back by committee, it keeps everybody healthy. We won't have to worry about the injury issues. That's been another thing in Dallas over the past 5 or 6 seasons. There's been injury issues amongst our star players. We can sort of keep the carries down. We can keep the and the guys that we have healthy, and if one speed guy goes down, if McFadden goes down with an ankle injury again, like he loves to do, then we can plug Randall right in, and we can plug Jones right in, and we can plug whoever right in who does the same thing because he has the same running style, and all of a sudden we don't have to switch up our offensive style. We don't have to go out of our element, out of our game plan. We can just keep the same game plan and keep chugging along. And, you know, so that's why I think that this whole triple running back thing and having a little bit of speed in there too would work.
I agree. You make some valid points. The one thing I do want you to remember is Chris Johnson fell off his last 2 years in Tennessee. So you're remembering the CJ, you know, 2K or whatever his nickname was, those years that he did so great. There's a reason why he's not still, you know, the guy who sells out the stadium in Tennessee, and it's because he fell off. So,
well, unfortunately, I'm remembering him as a Jet, and that's even worse. Because he had a terrible career in New York. But again, he hasn't run behind an offensive line like this his entire career. He had a pretty decent one his first couple of years in Tennessee when Tennessee was still relevant. But now, you know, he's been on bad teams with bad support systems for the last 4 or 5 seasons. So I think he's got potential. Same way I think McFadden's got potential. Run DMC, I call him. I think he's got potential as well, where, yeah, he's had some injury issues, he hasn't been on good teams, he hasn't really produced the same way that we want him to produce coming in as a veteran, but I think it's all upward from here. I think that a second chance, maybe even a third chance for some of these guys is warranted if they're put on a Super Bowl caliber team. I mean, if you put anybody, I mean who's the best running back in the league right now? I'm trying to think, probably Marshawn Lynch. You put Marshawn Lynch on, you know, Jacksonville, you know. You put Marshawn Lynch on, well, Jacksonville's getting better. I shouldn't say Jacksonville. But you put Marshawn Lynch on Tampa Bay last year. You put Marshawn Lynch on Tennessee last year. You put Marshawn Lynch on a team with a terrible offensive line, like out in San Diego, a decent team, just a bad offensive line. Lynch isn't the guy that he is. Lynch isn't as productive as he is. These running backs are products of a system around them, and if a passing game is clicking, it helps the run game because then they have to drop back and you've got a lot of lanes to run in. If the running game is clicking, it helps the passing game. If the offensive line is blocking and pulling and doing their thing, it really just wears a team down, and that's what we saw last year in Dallas. These teams, these opponents were exhausted by the fourth quarter. I mean, these teams could not. I saw Richard Sherman, who's one of the best athletes in the league, mind you. Richard Sherman, in the third quarter of last year's game, hands on his hips, just panting. I mean, we just had the capability to just run teams into the ground. Now we sort of have the capability to run around them, sort of a catch-me-if-you-can kind of a thing. And I'm excited about it. I mean, you may not be, but that's okay. We will see what happens, you know, in September, but I'm excited right now. This is the most excited I've been about a Cowboy running staff in a long time. About an hour, a little over an hour left to go here. 3:48 p.m. on a beautiful, and again, I said it, beautiful Memorial Day, May 25th, 2015. We're talking about America's team. And you want to talk about a guy who's a true soldier? Now, again, anybody out there who's in the service, don't take this the wrong way, but a guy who's a true warrior, a true soldier out on the field, but doesn't necessarily get the credit that he deserves? Well, there's only one guy that really
comes to mind. He's been the head coach of two other teams on a fill-in basis. And that is over the middle, caught by Witten, who loses his helmet but still keeps going. A penalty marker is down, and Witten takes it to the 5-yard line. Jason Witten, in a play that you're going to see replayed a lot of times this week, losing his helmet and taking it all the way to the 5-yard line.
And then to get hit and lose your hat and keep running without your hat.
Ooh.
And he took, I mean, that is a real blow that he took to his helmet head-to-head. And then he kept running. He's looking to the outside. He's looking behind him. Ooh, that is a whap. When you can do that.
That is definitely a whap. John Madden said it better than I've heard John Madden say a lot of things. The guy, if you could hear it correctly, again, we still have these audio things, but again, I'm doing the best I can playing these for you.
I didn't play the whole clip because a lot of it goes back into them getting back in the huddle and things like that. But in the bulk of the clip that you heard there, Jason Witten, who I was still in college at this point, this was a game against the Eagles. I believe, I don't have the year in front of me, but I will get the year. I'm pretty sure it was
2009.
But yeah, I'm just going to say, it was late 2000s. I think I was a junior in college watching the game. And, you know, he got hit. And for those of you who want to see the play, I put it up on the Stars Align Facebook page. He got hit, got popped by two defenders, helmet came off, and he ran an extra 20 yards with his helmet off before he got tackled. That's something you don't see. Well, they can't do it anymore because now if the helmet comes off, it's dead at the spot of the play. But he's the one who sort of initiated that rule. Jason Witten's the one who sort of made the NFL change the way they look at concussion protocols and change the way that they looked at helmet security and safety. That play right there is instrumental in perhaps the history of the league going forward, but yet nobody talks about Jason Witten. He's sort of the quiet kid in class who gets straight A's but doesn't really talk to anybody or socialize with anybody. He is that kid who comes in, does his job, performs, and leaves. And that's what I love about Jason Witten, but what I hate about it is that he does not get the same sort of media hype coverage. He doesn't get the same sort of, you know, recognition other than people outside of Big T and their fan base that a guy like Gronk would get or a guy like Jimmy from New Orleans would get. Because, you know, sure, they're great players, okay? Gronk is a sensational tight end. Guys like Vernon Davis, Antonio Gates, sensational tight ends. But if you ask them, they'll tell you they're the best tight end in the league. If you ask Jason Witten what he is, he says, well, I'm just here to help my team and, you know, help my team win, and I couldn't do it without the offensive line. I couldn't do it without Romo. I mean, that's a class act guy right there. He's not going to tell you he's the best in the league. But if you look at his production, dude's always open, always open. And I know you have some strong opinions on Witten as well.
Yeah, I mean, the reason why I wanted to do this segment is because I feel like, so top guy in the tight end class, right? Everybody thinks it's Gonzalez, all right? I think that's pretty safe to say. He's got most of the records for the tight ends. I think Witten will eventually catch him, but I think Gronk is going to shatter all of them, assuming he can play full seasons for the rest of his career. I don't get it, right? So think about it like this. 2014, he had 64 catches, 703 yards. He was averaging 11 yards per catch. He had 5 touchdowns, okay? Most tight ends on every team are looked at as a goal line option, but because we had DeMarco and because we had Dez and even Cole Beasley, who showed up late as a slot guy who you could not cover on a quick slant, I didn't see Witten get a lot of goal line looks. I can think of a couple off the top of my head that he caught in the end zone, but you would think for a guy who's looked at as the second best tight end ever, as of right now, he would be getting more than 5 touchdowns a year. He's never had a double-digit touchdown season in his entire career, Chris. So we're talking, he's heading into his 13th season. He's 33 years old. You got to think he's probably only got a couple years left in him, pending any ridiculous injuries. I don't know. I don't think he's going to play till, you know, late 30s. I think he's probably going to cap it off around 35. He's got a family. And he's never had a double-digit touchdown season. Now, I looked up Gronk's stats. Over in New England, he's played 5 seasons. I consider that more like 4.5 because there was that year that he only played a few games. He has 54 career touchdowns to Witten's career 57. Okay, Gronkowski, who played 4.5 seasons, has 54 touchdowns, and Witten, who's played 12 seasons, has 57. He's going to shatter Witten's touchdowns. He's probably going to kill his yards. He's on pace right now to be right there with Witten at the end of his career, but you got to think he's going to fly by him. So if he flies by Witten and Witten's going to go by Gonzalez, you got to think, all right, looks like Gronk's going to be the guy. So I don't know. I feel like durability is going to Witten, though, because in a landslide, I looked it up, he's played every season game except one in his rookie year, 2003. He's not missed a single regular season game for his rookie year in 2003 as a tight end, as a physical guy, as you heard in that clip, somebody who gets drilled in the head, ripped the helmet off his face, shows up in, you know, at the 5-yard line with blood running down his nose. Doesn't matter. He's not missing the game. He's out there fighting. He's blocking for to help the run game. He's making, you know, fourth down catches to keep the ball moving. I just feel like he's not getting that top-tier tight end attention, and I don't know if it's his build, but, you know, he's not 6'6 like Gronk. He's not – I don't know how tall Jimmy Graham is, but he's up there too. So maybe because if you're not this, you know, freak tall tight end, people don't consider you, you know, a best guy. I don't get it. That's
Jimmy
why
Graham
I wanted to talk about
seven.
It. It blows me away.
Jimmy Graham is 6'7". He was a former basketball player at the University of Miami. But – I mean, I see what you're saying in a way, but Gronk has sort of become the entire offense for New England. I don't want to say the entire offense, but New England hasn't had a, you know, a Dez Bryant. They haven't even had a Terrence Williams. You know, they haven't gotten guys like Keogh. They haven't gotten guys like, who else was it, Patrick Creighton, Miles Austin, guys of that caliber that Witten has had to play alongside throughout his career. Dallas has always had a star-studded or at least relatively productive wide receiver, and sometimes two of them, to go along with Witten. Witten has always sort of been more of that role player, you know? He's always sort of been more of Romo's security blanket, per se, if you want to put it that way. Where when they need that 5-yard reception, they need that 10-yard reception, it's third down and they got double coverage on Dez and Terrence Williams is run off the ball and Cole Beasley gets popped over the middle and there's no other options open. It seems like Jason Witten is always open. And the one thing to me that sort of stuck out to me was I was watching a game in college with a friend of mine who has nothing to do with the Cowboys, not a Cowboy fan at all, not a Cowboy hater, but not a Cowboy fan. He is a Chicago Bears fan, poor guy, but he's a Chicago Bears fan, and he is diehard. He's as diehard as we are about it, and there's several stories I could tell you about his diehardness for the Chicago Bears, but that's for a different program at a different time. But
hashtag diehard.
Exactly. I remember watching the game with him, and he tells me, man. And I'm like, man, what? Like, what, you know? He goes, man, you know, Jason Witten is always open. It always seems like if the ball goes to Witten, not only is he open, but he catches the ball. And, you know, Witten is pretty much good for 5 to 7 to 10 yards every single reception because he just knows how to get over. Now, this kid was a football player. He played on my school's football team, so the kid understood football. And he's like, he just knows the defense. He knows the holes in the defense. He knows where to go, even if he has to break off his predestined route to get open. Jason Witten and Romo have that connection. And they've played pretty much their entire career together. And he knows where to go and what to do and how to get the ball and how to be productive. Whereas guys like you mentioned, Gronk and Jimmy Graham and, you know, even guys like Antonio Gonzalez and guys like Gates, Vernon Davis, they became more of a star wide receiver. They became more of the offense. I mean, Gronk is one of those guys where you look at him as another wide receiver. The way that they use him, he's basically a 6'7", 260-pound wide receiver. So, you know, they use Jason Witten a more traditional way. Nobody gives Jason Witten credit for the way that he blocks either. Witten's a hell of a blocker. I mean, have you ever seen Gronk throw a block? He's too concerned with catching the football and being the star and going and partying out in Vegas. Same thing with Vernon Davis.
I think the only block I've seen Gronk throw is the one where he was escorting the guy out of the club in the Colts game.
Exactly. That's probably true. I mean, you know, he doesn't block. Same thing with, what's his name there, Vernon Davis. Now, I know he's not a huge factor in the league anymore, but Vernon Davis never blocked. He was always downfield. You know, Jason Witten does it all. He does everything that this team needs him to do and asks him to do, and he's the most humble guy on the planet when you ask him about it. And I just, if the Cowboys win the Super Bowl, yeah, I want Romo to get one, but mostly I want Jason Witten to get one because like you said, he might not have the most career stats when it comes to tight ends in the league. His highest touchdown career league was 2010, where he had 9. Right after that was 2013, where he had 8. But, you know, you look at his receptions for 20-plus yards, 15, 13, 11, 14, 12, 10, 13. I mean, he's got 124 receptions of 20-plus yards, which, you know, so that shows that he can go out, he can run the deep ball route, he can catch the ball over the middle and either run for yards or he can get open down the field. His longest reception, okay, 64 yards, 2011, but then you've also got another one here, 69 rather, you know, for long, he's got all sorts of different avenues and abilities and capabilities. I mean, if you look at his total receptions, okay, 64 total career receptions, 703 yards, averaging 11 yards per reception. That's fantastic. That is the same thing as a pitcher having a 1 ERA, and he's not an all-star. He's not a guy that's going to be, oh, my God, how do we game plan for Jason Witten? But he's going to be a guy that when you need him to produce in the clutch, I would much rather have Jason Witten on my team. And I know that New England, you're suffering a lot right now with the Tom Brady thing, and I know a lot of friends who live in New England, please don't shoot the messenger, but I would rather have a guy like Jason Witten on my team than a Gronk right now because, one, he stays healthy. The man played with a lacerated spleen, okay, and he missed, what, one game, something like that? So he is tough. He's a warrior. He gets open. He produces, and he shuts his mouth. He doesn't ever talk the talk, and that's why I love Jason Witten and why when I buy a Dallas Cowboy jersey, 9 times out of 10, it's a Jason Witten. I have 3 Jason Witten jerseys, one in blue, one in Thanksgiving, and one in their home white. So he's got to be a model for anybody out there who wants to play tight end.
Yeah, I agree. I think he's a phenomenal teammate. I think he does the ugly stuff, the stuff that's not glorified, excuse me. You know, the blocking, that tough pain in the butt stuff that you just don't see a lot of guys commit to do. And, you know, that's why I wanted to talk about it. Like I said, I just feel like he is a guy who should be in the Pro Bowl every year. You know, he is a guy who should be a team captain and should be looked at as the top tight end. I mean, Romo was quoted this year by saying he's the greatest Cowboy ever. Now, do I think that's a little bit of, you know, man love? Yeah, absolutely, because that's his best friend, you know. That's his, you know, his kid's godfather and everything. They've been, you know, best friends since they, you know, since Romo showed up. But it's just one of those things where he's not sexy, you know, he doesn't stand out. People, he doesn't, like what you said, he's not caught partying and spiking, you know, all kinds of stuff. And Gronk's just a goofball. He's young. I think he appeals more, but I also think it's a game plan thing. Like you said, I think New England hasn't had a, you know, a just crazy wideout that you have to shut down. They've always gone through Gronk and maybe the power run. But, yeah, that's I, for the most part, we agree.
Yeah, and, you know, one other thing about Witten that is I think of something that a lot of people – don't really give him credit for. We are up against it, so we do have to move on here because I do have a pretty heated topic coming up in a minute due to my psychotic hatred for a particular internet app. But I feel like Jason Witten is one of those guys that is going to go down in the history books, and this is unfortunate, but he's going to go down in the history books as, man, you remember Jason Witten? You know, guys are going to sit around and say, oh, yeah, Jason Witten, great player, you know, awesome player, you know. But the way that the league is trending right now, it's becoming a social media league, which is ironically a good segue into our next topic. See what I did there? Yeah, but anyway. So it's one of those things where they want the highlight clips. They want the guys on Twitter who argue with analysts. I mean, they want the... You know, they want the guy who's out partying, who provides funny sound bites and things. That's what this league is becoming. Not only is it becoming a business, because it is becoming a business on one end, but it's also becoming sort of
social media avenue and a highlight avenue on the other side. And Witten's never going to give you the highlights. He's just going to help you win games. And if Jason Witten can help us win this season, if he can have another productive year the same way that he's been having, I will take him all day long, and I will wear his jersey with pride. But segueing into that topic I was mentioning, Tony Romo, vaunted quarterback Tony Romo, makes his Twitter debut. Now, it took him quite a while to get on Twitter. I mean, Twitter's been out now since I've been early college, maybe late high school. Twitter's been around, but he hadn't been on it. And with Witten and with Romo, rather, as sort of tortured as he has been by people in social media alone, I'm not surprised. I mean, people, especially after that game in Seattle, if Twitter was as big as it is now, after that game in Seattle, they would have had a field day with him. And I don't mean last year where Romo had a career day. I mean the one where he fumbled the snap in Seattle that cost us a chance to go to the Super Bowl in his first season. Anybody remember that? I remember that. Unfortunately, I still have nightmares about it. If Romo comes on to Twitter, and Dustin, I don't know if you knew this, and listeners out there, I don't know if you knew this, but Tony Romo, another humble guy, gets on Twitter for the first time, and his first tweet is, looking back on it, that was a catch. Okay. Looking back on it, that was a catch. Now, it was. He's right. In my opinion, in your opinion, in the Cowboy World opinion, it was a catch. But it's a little too late, Tony. It's a little bit too late. People are starting to forget about it a little bit. They're starting to get excited about next year's season. You know, we know that we didn't win the Super Bowl this year. Great, everything. But with as sort of tortured as you've been with everything, why are you opening the door for haters to just blast you and blast your family and blast your team on Twitter? I mean, Twitter is evil. Some of these comments on Twitter, I've seen some of the most vile, nasty stuff I've seen on Twitter in a long time. And if you're going to open up that can of worms, Tony, right before the season, I mean, first you guarantee a Super Bowl, now you go on and tweet that. I mean, I hate Twitter as it is, but that kind of disappointed me a little bit. I don't know what your feelings on it, but...
All right, so first I'm going to correct you. His first tweet was the single digit number 9, because I don't think you really any idea what to say. His first official, I'm going to tweet, was, looking back on it, I think it was a catch, smiley face, which is, if anybody watches the post games or anything, you know he's got sarcasm in him, and he loves to throw out, you know, funny backhanded compliments, stuff like that. That's the type of guy that he is anyways, as far as I've seen. I'm not best buds with him. So he does break his, you know, his silence. He does the whole Dez catch. And then the most recent one was he posts a picture of him, Witten, and DeMarco, and he's got the subtitle, "Where Have You Gone, Joe DiMaggio?" which I don't know how many Yankee fans there are out there or whatever, but, you know, he's clearly unhappy with the loss of Murray. And I watched an interview, I think it was Jimmy Kimmel was doing a big Texas tour, and Romo showed up, and he was just kind of joking around, telling him stories about, you know, them all hanging out, you know, going out to drinks, him, Jerry, the coach, just everybody, Witten, DeMarco, the whole gang. They were out doing something for a special occasion, and Romo had approached Jones, and he was kind of, you know, he had been drinking a little bit, so he was just goofing around with him, and he's like, you know, listen, we gotta get this deal with Murray done, because, you know, I want us to get a ring. And he thought Murray was that important, and, you know, Jones assured him, yeah, we're working on it. And Tony had been on the record. He's like, I'll take a pay cut. I'll do whatever we got to do to get this deal done. And Jerry, you know, appreciated the sentiment. And then fast forward, and DeMarco's gone. And they still restructured Romo, right? They still did it.
I believe they're working on doing it. But, yeah, it either happened or it's in the works. I'll find it right now. But, yeah.
Okay, so now here's my beef with athletes, celebrities, social media. So you take Twitter, Facebook, whatever. They don't really use Facebook, but if you, I know a ton of celebrities interact with fans, through Twitter. Now, if you take that away, all we have is what was said last to the media, right?
Mm-hmm.
So a guy like anybody, really, but we love using New England as an example, right? A guy like Tom Brady who says the textbook, he says everything the right way, or even a guy like Bill Belichick who's so bland in his post-game meetings, you know, we're on to next week and this, that, the other. That's all you've got to write about, and the press hate him for that. But now that you have Twitter, you literally at your disposal have this platform to reach out to thousands upon thousands of followers. Some of these guys, I think, might even have a million followers, but generally hundreds of thousands of people follow celebrities and they want to know what they're doing. Oh, you just got a bagel here. Oh, you're eating there. Oh, cool. Sweet. Like they feel included in these people's lives. So now
you just took a dump. Can we get a photo?
Yeah, exactly. So now you're literally putting yourself out there in vulnerable moments too. Like what I just said. Well, what they're all human. These athletes are human, just like us. What if they drink too much and say something stupid on Twitter? See, that would never have happened if they were not involved in the social media game. If these leagues put something in their contract that said stay away, I think it'd be better for the images of a lot of these athletes. Because I'll tell you what, I've seen a lot more athletes put up posts impulsively, emotionally, and then they take a dig at somebody or something, and they give off this terrible image of themselves, and then bam, the post is deleted. Their agent gives them a statement to say, I apologize, I should not have said that, da, 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 da. They go on record and they say what they're supposed to say, and then it gets removed from our minds. That's BS. I think there's literally more negative than positive with a professional athlete, a celebrity, having access to us regular folks. As much as everyone probably hates to hear me say that, I want to know what Tony's doing 24 hours a day just as much as the next guy. But like I said, I think it's in their best interest to stay the hell away from stuff like this, because I don't see the benefit. I just don't see the benefit.
Yeah, I mean, athletes, they want to be treated like normal people. They're normal people just like you and I. When they get off the field, the same thing as us leaving the office, they want to be able to get on Twitter and do, you know, the same thing that we would do. I understand that. But when you are an athlete who is on a team that is as vaunted and a team that people love to hate as much as the Dallas Cowboys, and a team that's always going to make media headlines, always create controversy, you know, a team where even if you're not an NFC East fan, you know, you've got an opinion on the Cowboys, for the starting quarterback who has had trials and tribulations as well as good moments throughout his career with, you know, the interceptions and some of the bad decisions and the fumbled snap and the things like that, to open the door to tweet something like that, like if he would have tweeted out and said, you know, if Romo would have tweeted out and said, hey, guys, new to Twitter, checking it out, you know, go Cowboys, whatever, that would have been cool. Or if he would have been like, hey, you know, finish the fight, hashtag, whatever, you know, looking forward to next season, cool. But something that was as, you know, discussed and talked about as that catch, something that has as many opinions surrounding it as that catch, to sort of take your history and to, you know, open Pandora's box up on the world's most evil app doesn't bear well for you, because people are going to hate you anyway. People are going to make those internet memes about it. People are going to, you know, make all sorts of, you know, funny sound clips and all sorts of stuff. But they're going to have photos of you throwing interceptions and doing that. People are going to hate you regardless. But if you stir up the pot a little bit, you know, I can see a guy like Dez doing that. I can see a guy, you know, like perhaps, I'm not even going to use another Cowboy for example, but, well, I will, an older Cowboy. I can see Terrell Owens doing something like that. But Tony, I guess I had better expectations for him. I know he's sarcastic, but
And I know he sort of has this sense of humor about him and things like that, but you are going to create, I don't think he realizes how big Twitter and Facebook really are, and I don't think he realizes that the can of worms that he just opened and the can of worms
already
delete or no,
does he keep the account?
No, do I think he does? Yes. Do I think he should? No. And
I think it's
going to
be deleted. I think it'll be deleted halfway through the season. I'm calling it.
I don't think he'll delete it because I think he's like, you know, a little kid learning how to ride his bike for the first time. I think he'll keep it, and now he'll find, you know, instead of saying things, the things that he wants to say that he can't say in press conferences, I feel like he will say them on Twitter now. But I just don't think it's a good idea for him being the career that he has had. Okay, if Peyton Manning opened up a Twitter, if this happened to Peyton Manning, and Peyton Manning opened up a Twitter and said the exact same thing, I don't think anyone really cares. Everyone goes, yeah, Peyton, listen, man, I hear you, it sucked, it was a bad call, blah, blah, Peyton, unless you're, you know, NFC West fan of another team out there. But the way Romo is with these interceptions and the way people love to just make fun of him and poke fun at him, and he, I don't think, realized what he got himself into. And now that he's got Twitter, I think this is the beginning of the end for Tony Romo, because now he's going to tweet things out and his whole image is going to change. Things are going to say, he's going to say things that are going to be taken out of context, whether it's intentionally or not. And he's going to be looked back on as sort of a jerk if he says certain
Do you remember the Country Music Awards? Romo came out to introduce somebody, and then he took that Deflategate shot at the Pats. You know, he has a sense of humor. Yeah, right. But you got to admit that he probably loved the fact that he got to say that. You know, it could have been a pre-written line. It wouldn't have mattered. The fact that he gets to go out there and just, you know, throw a funny joke out. Mm-hmm. I don't think he would regret that either. I just think, I agree what you're saying. He's pumped to be in society and pumped to feel like one of the guys, you know, and he's a regular dude that can just, you know, put out his thoughts and stuff. But I do agree with the harassment thing. I don't know, man. I just think there's too much negative to outweigh the positive of him signing up for that.
There's definitely too much negative surrounding it. And another thing, too, is with Tony on Twitter, I mean, yeah, he wants to take a shot at Brady, and everyone thinks it's funny. But with me, I am that kind of guy. I have that sense of humor. I actually enjoy pissing people off when it comes to my sense of humor. In fact, most of the times when I'm meeting somebody, mostly, you know, mostly a joke, but when I'm meeting somebody, I usually give them that disclaimer before I meet them that, hey, I'm going to say some things that are completely in jest, completely kidding around, that may or may not be taken the wrong way. You might think I'm a, you know what, that's fine, take them as you will, but it's not going to stop me from saying them. I give them that little disclaimer. Tony doesn't have the chance to give that disclaimer. He's in the limelight, he's in the spotlight, but he sort of came out now, and he's showing himself and his sense of humor and what he thinks is funny. He is doing it, I think, in the wrong way. I think Tony needed to wait until his career was over, because Twitter's only going up. Twitter's not going to go anywhere. I think Tony should have waited or should have gotten on Twitter before, you know, long ago. Because to get on it now, to be late to the party, and then to come into the party and be a, you know what, you know, how would you or I like that? Like let's put it in this sense, okay? We're throwing a party, we're athletes, we're doing whatever, we're doing our thing, we just won the game or lost the game, whatever. We're throwing a party, dude shows up an hour late and comes in and starts talking to the girl you like and starts spilling beer all over everybody and starts, you know, being loud and changing the music and everything. You're going to be like, damn, you know, this dude is a, you know what, starts with an A, ends with a hole, you know? And now it's the same thing. He's late to the party on Twitter. When Twitter's already huge, now he's like, oh, hey, guys, here I am, you know, as if people didn't already know who the hell he was. Oh, hey, guys, here I am. And then he says something so sort of condescending, and you know, he just sort of takes that shot that was, I loved it, but I know personally, if it were me, or if you did it, or if my buddy who's a Cowboy fan, I'd be dying, I'd screenshot it, I'd have it up my wall, I would love it. But for my starting quarterback, who's I've had to defend on numerous occasions in bars, on the internet, and fights with people, I have had to defend this dude so many times that now he's making it almost impossible for me to defend. Because now people are going to come out and say, ah, you know, those interceptions, Andy types Twitter things, you know. And there are certain things where I can defend the interceptions. He didn't have an offensive line. He had to run for his life. He, you know, had to make plays, and he had to score 40 points a game because he had no defense. And I can defend all that. But if somebody's got the hard, concrete evidence of him being a you-know-what on Twitter, you know, when he really doesn't deserve to be a you-know-what on Twitter, because he really, in the grand scheme of things, hasn't done much in his career other than, you know, because everybody rates everything as, you have to win a ring nowadays. Oh, oh, oh. So if I have the concrete evidence in front of me, I can't defend the dude anymore. And I want to defend him. I love him. But I can't. And so that's why I think he stays on it, much to my chagrin. I think he stays on it, but I think that if I was his agent and if I was Jerry Jones, I'd be like, Tony, shut it down. Stat. Right now.
You heard it here first, Tony. Chris wants you off Twitter. Get it done.
I want you off of Twitter until you retire. Your wife can tweet. Your wife's a sweet lady. She can tweet. Your agent can tweet. You know, give the phone to your two-year-old son and let him tweet. But you stay off Twitter while you still have a star on your helmet. That's just me. Only about 40 minutes left here to go in the program, and I know we went a little bit shorter on the Jason Witten segment than perhaps we should have. There's just not really a lot to say on Jason Witten, you know, other than the fact that he's just an all-star, in our opinion, in anybody who's a Dallas Cowboy fan's opinion. I guarantee you, if you ask any one of the analysts out there, that he's a great tight end. So I think we sort of shortcut him a little bit, but the stats don't lie, the facts don't lie. He doesn't have the numbers of some of the other competitive tight ends in the league right now, even though we think he's the best. We also mentioned a little bit, for those of you just joining us, veteran running backs, who came in, who we think they should take, who we liked that they interviewed, who they didn't interview that we think that they should bring in. And then we just talked about Romo and his much long-anticipated social media debut. I hate it. Dustin doesn't seem to have a problem with it. The last thing really to get into before we do our star or not segment, who are the toughest opponents on this Dallas Cowboys schedule this season? Who would it be? I'm going to let you take this one first because I know you've been doing a little bit of research. I'm still wavering. I have about, what do we narrow it down to, four or five toughest?
I still have
about six. So I'm going to just pick one while you're talking here. But
all right, so first I want to lead off with, I reserve the right to change anything based on injuries. That's pretty reasonable. Romo goes down, then what I think of a 12-4 season turns into a 2-14 season. But
or anybody that we're playing, if one of their players gets suspended or goes down or whatever, too.
Yeah, that's of course. True. Very, very good point. So, all right, so you look at the schedule, right? Week one, at home Giants. Week two, at Philly. Week three, we're home for the Falcons. Week four, we're on the road at the Saints. Week five, at home for the Patriots. Week six, bye. Week six, seven, at Giants. Week eight, home at Seattle. Week nine, home against the Eagles. Week 10, we're at Buccaneers. Week 11, we're at Miami. Week 12, we're home for Carolina. Week 13, at Washington. Week 14, at Green Bay. Week 15, home, Jets. And week 16, at Buffalo. Week 17, we are at home to end the season against the Redskins. So here's my thing. I immediately look at the schedule and I, you know, the ones that jump out to me are the obvious. The Pats, the Seahawks. I even think the Bills are a scary team, but only because of Rex Ryan and that cold, cold weather because we're playing in December against Buffalo. So here's my thing. I think we win easy against the Giants week one. I don't care what anybody says. People have that listed as one of our biggest trap games because Eli does well in Jerry Land and we're opening up at home, and yada, yada, yada. I don't know.
I'm a big favorite right now, yeah.
Right. I don't buy into it. I think Beckham's a beast that's great. Victor Cruz might be back and ready to go. So we're talking about two weapons on each. They could potentially have a better wide receiver core than we could. But the fact of the matter is I'm taking Romo over Eli Manning every day of the week. So, and the O-line that we got. So I see us beating the Giants, no problem. Beating the Eagles, beating the Falcons, going 3-0 into New Orleans where we're going to lose. I say that because Rex Ryan –
even without Jimmy Graham.
Exactly. Even without Jimmy Graham. And you want to know why? It's because of the desperation New Orleans is going to be in. I think the Saints walk into that 1-2 needing a win, and we're going to be 3-0 because I do not see the Giants, the Eagles, or the Falcons beating us. I think we're going in 3-0, and I think against a defensive coordinator who beat the crap out of us before and who knows all too much about us, I think that's a trap game. And it's
three games before they play us. The Saints before they play us play at Arizona, home against Tampa Bay, and at Carolina before we come in.
Right, and that's why I think they're only winning one of those games, and it's Tampa Bay. Carolina's going to take them out, and I'm telling you, what did you say, week one?
Arizona? At Arizona Cardinals.
Yeah, I'm taking the card. Look, the reason why I picked the Saints as a loss is because they're the type of team with Drew Brees, even though they lost Jimmy Graham, they're going to show up, they're going to be hungry, needing a win, and we're going to go into it being humble and, oh, we're 3-0, we're just plugging along, finish the fight, blah, blah, blah. And I'm telling you, Drew Brees is going to light us up in the dome. Would he come to Dallas and do it? I don't think so. But when we play in New Orleans, huh?
I say he didn't last year. He, I think we won, 38-14 last year or something?
Right, and then what happened the year before that when we played the Saints?
We were in New Orleans, and we gave up an NFL record, 40 first downs and 600 total yards of offense.
And we got beat the crap out of. So, okay, last year we beat them. That was a retribution. I think we beat them big, too, because that's why people were like, wow, way to get them back for that year before. I don't want to spend the whole segment on the Saints.
They will run the score up on anybody. I mean, you look at this Saints team, and not to cut you off, I know we don't get a lot of time, but this Saints team, when they were good, when they were in their prime, they'd be up 28-3 and still scoring touchdowns in the fourth quarter. I mean, they deserve it. Screw them.
I agree with you. That's the type of offense they are. And, hey, Sean Payton's a Bill Parcells guy, and they were once Dallas Cowboys, so I have no problem with Sean Payton and his mentality of the game. I think he's a great coach. But so I don't want to spend the whole thing talking about the Saints, but I think we lose to the Saints. You can agree or disagree, whatever. I think we win at the Patriots without Darrelle Revis, without the Super Bowl caliber, team. I don't care if Brady's there or not. Obviously, if Brady's there, it's going to be tougher. I don't care who's behind the helm. The fact of the matter is, that's Bill Belichick's team. That's Bill Belichick's offense. Whatever Bill wants to do with the ball is what happens. And if they're playing against us and they know we don't do that well against the run, I guarantee you we're going to be looking at a whole lot of LeGarrette Blount and some power run. And if they decide, hey, well, they don't do that well against the pass, they're going to be airing it out. It does not matter who's throwing the ball. End of story. That's going to be a tough game, but I think we get the win because I think for once our team on paper will win a game because of who we have on the team. We got that dynamic wideout. We have a good Pro Bowl caliber quarterback. We have the best O-line in football. I don't care who's running the ball. But we just drafted a freak corner who I think is going to be a huge, huge, huge guy in this league, and that's leading into our next segment. But we'll get there when we do.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're going to have an improved defense, and I think we beat New England. End of story. Bye week 6, week 7, Giants, we win again. We sweep them. I'm telling you right now, Giants, I'm not worried about the Giants in the slightest, and I'm not worried about the Eagles in the slightest. Seahawks,
you're not going to have a lot of fans in upstate New York, but okay.
Yeah, I don't care. Listen, week eight, Seahawks, I think we lose. Here's why. We're at home. I think for whatever the reason, everybody was pumped to go into Seattle and make history and be one of the only teams that won at Seattle last year, and we did it. And I think one of the things I just saw on, like, Bleacher Report, Terrence Williams had one of the best catches of the year last year, which was against Seattle, which is when Romo was out of the pocket and threw it to what I thought was to Witten, which was a bad throw and was an overthrow, but ended up landing right in Terrence Williams' hands as he tiptoed the sideline. Probably one of the best catches I've seen a Cowboy make, to be honest with you. And that play won us that game, not necessarily anything else. So do I think if everything –
And the
fact
Dez,
you know,
made Richard Sherman look stupid, but yeah, okay.
Listen, I agree. Dez manhandled Richard Sherman, which is why when you said we played Seattle – he's sitting there with hands on the hips. That had a lot to do with Dez Bryant. But
yeah,
here's my point. The same reason that Seattle's going to beat us is the same reason why I'm picking us to beat the Packers in week 14. It's because they're going to be pissed off. It's because they're going to be pissed off. Exactly. They're going to be pissed off that we showed up and we did something that other teams couldn't do, and they're going to be out for blood, and they're going to be coming for us. And we're pissed off because that was a catch. And we should have been in the NFC Championship game against Seattle, and we probably would have won, but we're not going to spend all day talking about that. So we lose to Seattle because they're hungry and they want to get us back. Week 9, we're beating the Eagles. Week 10, we're beating the Buccaneers. Give me a break. Week 11, the biggest trap game of the schedule, we're losing to the Dolphins. I'm afraid of Ndamukong Suh. He's a dirtbag, and I don't know. I'm worried because there was one week last year where our offensive line, the best offensive line in football, looked mediocre, and it was against Philly, and it was against some loser who's like, ah, they don't really look like that big of a, you know, an offensive line, and they're not that great. And then sure as hell, they made us look foolish, and Romo couldn't stand up straight, and that's why we did
was
so poor against Philly last year. Yeah, that was last season. Nope, it was Philly. And I'm pretty sure it was Peters. It was Peters. He was talking smack. So anyway, anytime you have an aggressive defensive tackle who does not feel intimidated by any kind of labels, reputation, whatever, that worries me. Because even though I think we have the best offensive line in football, I think Ndamukong Suh is easily the best defensive tackle in football. And he demands two guys, just like one of our callers said, week one in our inaugural broadcast. He's a fat tub of goo who gets in the way, who's going to take Frederick, who's going to take Martin to help him, who might take...
Are you there?
They're very underrated secondary. I think Tannehill is finally being given some freedom to throw more than 10 yards down the field. They just got him some weapons. I'm telling you, Miami's the biggest trap game of this coming season. So week 11, I have us losing to Miami at Miami. Week 12, we're winning against the Panthers. Week 13, we're winning at Washington. Week 14, Packers, like I said, it's too important to us. It's righting a wrong. I think we beat the Packers. That's open to debate. Week 15, that's the Jets. I mean, come on. I really don't expect the first-year coach to turn that franchise around in 1 year. Week 16, the second biggest trap game, Buffalo Bills. We're going to lose in Buffalo. It's a late December game. I'm predicting probably a blizzard. You know the weather there more than I do. And I don't like my warm weather, pretty Texas team going down in the swamp, you know, in the blizzards. And playing football out there, I just don't think it really adds up for us. And then week 17, we're home against the Redskins. Other than the Redskins being dirtbags trying to injure us, I really don't think they're going to be fighting for the playoffs or anything. Probably in a spoiler role.
True. So what are you saying, 12-4? Oh, we're getting cut off there a little bit. Can you hear me?
Yeah, no, I'm still with you. 12-4.
Okay. 12-4. Yeah, it sounded like you might have gotten cut off a little bit there, but
All right, so 12-4. A little under a half hour left here to go on this 90-minute Cowboy Monday here on Memorial Day. And I'm looking at the schedule being sort of the same as you. It could be 11-5, could be 12-4, also could be 10-6. It really all depends, but I'm not going to go week through week. I'm going to agree with you. Well, maybe I have time to. Well, we'll see. But I see – I'm going to go over the games that I think are the toughest for us first before I go into a win or loss and before we get into our star or not segment here. And the first one, it's going to be – I know you're not worried, but I am a little bit, and that's playing at Philadelphia. Now, do I think we get the win week two? Yeah, I think we go in there – and get the win. We were the Road Warriors last year, perfect 8-0 record on the road, the only team to do that in a long time. So I feel confident about that. But I think it's going to be a tough game for us. I think Murray's going to be playing with a chip on his shoulder. He's going to be running like a man possessed. I think Sam Bradford has just pulled some performance out of his behind that, you know, we don't expect out of him. I think we're going to get a healthy dose of Tebow, which is, obviously, some people aren't worried about when it's down in the goal line situations. I might be. I think it's going to be a close game, field goal game, maybe a touchdown game. It's going to be a hard-hitting game. It's a 4 o'clock, so it's the prime time. Well, it's not prime time, but you know what I mean. It's the football day in America kind of a game, the game of the week that week. I definitely think that it's going to be tough for us, but I think we squeak one out just because we have the better goal line and we've stacked up our defense right now. The game I am worried about is home against Atlanta. Because if you get a healthy Matt Ryan, you get a healthy Julio Jones, and a healthy Roddy White, plus they just upgraded their defense a little bit, I think Atlanta's going to be tough for us. We've always had a little bit of trouble covering teams with two, you know, high-caliber and high-producing wide receivers. You know, the Saints did it to us a couple
of years ago. Don't they say that every year about Atlanta?
Do we do what?
Doesn't everybody say every year that Atlanta should be a favorite going in, and every year they find a way to mess it up?
True, but they usually have injuries early in the season and, you know, are fighting from behind with backups late in the season. Now we've got them week three when they're all probably still going to be healthy. You know, we're going to have Julio Jones, who is a nightmare to cover. We're probably going to have Scandrick or Carr on him. God, I hope it's not Carr, but we'll have one of the two of them on him. Probably have either Jones or whoever's not covering the other Jones on Roddy White. So I just think that with a healthy Matt Ryan, the only way that we win that game is put him on his back and get to him. And we've had trouble, you know, we've had a hard time doing that. Matt Ryan torched us last time we played. So, you know what, I see us going 2-0, losing that game. I see us losing to the Falcons, but I see us beating the Saints in New Orleans, because the Saints just don't have anybody. We saw them last year. They lost Darren Sproles, a couple years ago. They weren't the same team without him last year. They don't have Jimmy Graham anymore, who beat us up last year in that game, despite the big win. Drew Brees, I think, is on the decline. They don't really have an offensive line. Their best player on their team, besides Drew Brees, is a rookie. So I feel we go into the Superdome. It's a close game. We win that one. The Patriots without Brady, I take the win. Jimmy Garoppolo versus Tay. I can just see the storylines now. Eastern Illinois quarterback versus Eastern Illinois quarterback, the predecessor and the prodigy and this and that. I can just see the storylines now. I would much rather play Garoppolo than a PO'd Tom Brady, who's going to be playing with a vengeance this season. If Brady plays, I see us losing that game too. If he doesn't, I see us getting the win. Giants win. I think we beat the Seahawks. I don't think the Seahawks are all they're cracked up to be. I'm sorry, everybody out there in Seattle, but I just don't think the Seahawks are. I'm not intimidated by them anymore. We manhandled them last year. We got pretty much the same team coming back. I'm not intimidated. The Eagles, again, I'm not too worried about. Bucks, Dolphins, not so much. Panthers, not so much. The game in Green Bay, I am a little worried about. For the same reasons you mentioned, the cold weather. We play Green Bay December 13th. It's going to be frigid cold up there. I am a little bit nervous about our nerves going into that game. Green Bay does not lose at home.
that game, it can go either way for me. Jets win, Bills win, Redskins win. So I see us 12-4 as well, possibly 13-3. Worst case scenario, 11-5. And another, yes, another NFC East championship for your Dallas Cowboys. But again, I'm always an optimist, and I always get let down. I was pleasantly surprised this year. I thought they were going to go 8-8 again. So I should just say 8-8, and then who knows? Maybe they go undefeated. But I mean, who knows? every time I predict them to be good, they always let me down. So we'll see what happens this season. 20 minutes left to go here. 4:40 on a beautiful – well, actually, it was. I'm looking out my window. It was beautiful. There's a little bit of overcast right now here in upstate New York. But on a warm Memorial Day, for those of you who are taking the time out of your barbecuing and dinners to listen to us, we thank you very much. We have had a couple of callers call in, but as soon as I clicked the button to answer, you hung up. So I don't know if you got cold feet or what it was. But again, thank you for that and listening. The last segment we have is what we've been doing the last couple of weeks, and that is Star or Not. We have had a few of the Dallas Cowboy draft picks that we've went over, Jazz Green, Damian Wilson. Now, who do we have? Well, we have the number one overall draft pick, and that is Byron Jones, the freak athlete out of Connecticut. And, you know, I really need to find, before I go into this, I really need to find a soundbite or clip to play for Star or Not here. Maybe I should play like a Power Rangers theme song or something for these guys. I don't know, but I don't have anything on here to play that is worth it, but maybe next week. Byron Jones and Ryan Russell, the fifth-round pick out of Purdue, who I was scratching my head about because I didn't think we needed another D-end. I know we have DeMarcus Lawrence. We got Greg Hardy. We took Randy Gregory in the second round. George Selby. We've got guys now. For Ryan Russell, I like his productivity, but I was scratching my head because we passed up on two running backs to take him. So I know you've done your notes here. 15 minutes left to go. Shoot. What do you see on these guys?
All right, so we'll start with Russell. Let's start with this. Star or not. The way I look at it, I've been doing it, are they going to become a star? Not will they earn their star to get onto the team. So I guess the way that we're looking at it, we could go either way. Usually if they're going to become a star, then they're probably going to make the team. But if they're not going to become a star, they might not make the roster. So I think it kind of works. But just so everybody knows where I'm coming at with these picks, I'm saying no to the roster and no to a star on Ryan Russell. And I said it last week, I don't like to cut people down and be like, you're not going to be anything, because you know what? It's determination and heart, and that's all it takes. So, you know, for me to tell everybody on here that I don't think Ryan Russell is going to amount to anything, yeah, you know, who the hell am I? But my whole thing is, I think this was
That's the point of the show. You're allowed to have whatever opinion you want.
Absolutely. But I think this is a equivalent to the Philadelphia panic trade. This was a panic pick. We don't know what we're going to have for defensive end. We don't know if Hardy's going to play, if he's going to be suspended, da-da-da-da. We're going to take until the freaking preseason to figure it out. So they're like, all right, we need to get as many pass rushers into camp as possible, and we got our most important pick out of the way first round to help our secondary in Byron Jones, which we'll get to in a second. But I think as the rounds got deeper and deeper, they just looked for depth and potentially training camp type guys that we could see if they had the drive in them to make the team, and if not, whatever, we just cut them and, you know, we don't lose anything off of our backs. So, I mean, look at the guy. He's 6'4", out of Purdue, 269, so he's built like it, right? He's got the frame. He's got the body. He was predicted to go 6 or 7. It was a panic pick. We took him in the fourth round. Awful. Steven, what are you doing, dude? You're helping your pops out, but at the same time, you gotta dude, read your scouting report. He wasn't even going to go until the sixth round. You're reaching. So anyways, they reached early because I feel like it's the lack of pass rush. I don't care that they signed Hardy. They never know when he's going to be on the field. So that's kind of like a roster spot right there, because he's taken up a roster spot, but at the same time, he won't even be on the field until probably minimum week 6. That's what people are saying it might be appealed to. So they're trying to get as many defensive ends in there so they can see what's going on. So, you know, the drafting scouts have him as soft. He has the reputation, the lack of that competitive toughness. I guess once the offensive tackle makes that first block, he doesn't fight to improve his position. That's what the rap is out on this guy. He's content with staying blocked. So, I mean, coming from, you know how I am, I couldn't stand how soft DeMarcus Ware was. He was more of a linebacker most of his Cowboy career, but towards the end they switched him to defensive end, and he said he loved it because he likes just going after the QB. All right, man, but you got to be nasty. You can't just, you know, be soft, and that's how I see this dude. You know, he's got that perfect defensive lineman body, that fast pass rusher. He's a big, wide guy. He's got a long reach, got big hands, but he looks like he's got all the gifts in the world, natural abilities, and he's just, I don't know, no heart maybe.
Well, he didn't really produce the way I wanted him to produce for a fifth-round pick at Purdue. I mean, even the analysts, when they picked him, were like, oh, well, Ryan Russell, okay. You know, and Mel Kiper even said that, you know, when he was at Purdue, I was watching some games for him. They said he wasn't necessarily the guy that, you know, they thought that he could be when he first came into Purdue. And I'm looking at his stats here. Give me a minute to pull it up here, the good old, you know, good old internet. But I'm looking at him here. Okay. He appeared in all 12 games, making 11 starts. He had 30, and this was 2013, 35 tackles, 25 solo, 5 for loss with a pair of sacks. Okay. But to me, that's not good enough. And on a bad Purdue team, the last team that he played, he did not play in 2010. He played all 13 games in 11, all 13 games in 12, all 12 games in 13, 11 of them which he started. But again, 35 tackles as a D end in the Big Ten with 25 of them solo. Okay, so 25 solo tackles in the Big Ten. Now remember, you've got Michigan, Penn State, Ohio State who won the national championship. I mean, you've got some powerhouse teams in the Big Ten. You've got two sacks. Okay, he produced, he's whatever, but he's not the kind of guy that I was like, you know, if I'm an Ohio State fan, I'm a Michigan fan, I'm not saying, oh, geez, we got Ryan Russell coming up on the roster. You know, he's offensive lineman, y'all better bulk up for this week. You know, I'm not worried about that. And with him making the leap to the next level, I was watching his tape. His foot speed is not there. He has trouble coming around the edge. I was watching a little bit of the camp drills, the rookie camp drills. He looked all right, but he looked like he was too upright. He didn't look like he got down low enough in his stance. He looked like he was sort of standing up straight and coming around the edge. And guys like, you know, Chaz Green, who was covering him in the rookie minicamps, was pushing him all over the field. So I don't know. Like you said, do I think he makes the roster? Perhaps. We're very stacked at DN right now. I think he might help in terms, because he is a big, nasty dude. I think he might help out on special teams, but right now, when it comes, if the season were to start today, does he make the 53-man roster? Based on what I'm reading, no, I don't think that he does right now. I think he's going to end up, you know, on a different team come opening week.
Agreed.
Byron Jones now, okay? Byron Jones, you know, as much as I don't want to agree with you on certain things, you know, I mean, Ryan Russell, I think Ryan Russell has a shot to make the team. But again, like we said, I don't think that he will. But hey, I've been wrong before. Byron Jones, however, absolutely 100%, no question, this kid is a stud. And I mean, I saw him at the combine and didn't think much of it because, I mean, I watched the combine, but I sort of only half watched the combine. I got music on and I'm sort of, you know, doing something else, working on my actual radio show prep notes, or I'm doing different things. And I'm sort of half watching it, this and that. And I saw the broad jump and I was like, wow, all right, cool. You know, this dude's awesome. But I hadn't heard of him before when I was doing my mock draft. I didn't hear of him. I didn't put him in my mock drafts anywhere or anything like that. And all of a sudden, we take him first round. I'm like, what are you doing? You know, I was screaming at the television, why? You know, like, I'm looking at all the other guys behind him. Why are you taking him? And then all of a sudden, everyone was like, oh, this is a steal, and this is that, and this is that. And I'm like, why? And then I kind of calmed down, had a beer or six, and I watched him, and I watched him on tape, and I watched what he did at UConn, and I watched his interview, and not only is he a stand-up dude, not only can the dude talk well, he's smart, he dresses nice, he's intelligent, But the dude can flat out ball. I mean, I was watching him and was like, okay, there's more to this guy than jumping through the roof. There's more to this guy than being able to jump from, you know, here to the other side of the room without running first. There's more to that. The dude can play safety or corner, two of our biggest need positions, no question. He's physical for his size. I mean, he's 6'1", 190. I mean, the dude's small, but he's physical. He pushes receivers off the route. He's smart enough to know where receivers are going to go based on their maybe two or three steps, and he's able to shut them down and not let them go the way that they want to go. He's quick. He gets around the ball. And the biggest thing for me that I like about him, and, you know, thank God he's not having to cover Dez, but there's a lot of receivers out there who are like Dez who can go up and get that jump ball. And there's several guys on our roster who are going to be playing, Julio Jones being one of them, week three in that game against the Falcons. Also, guys like Odell Beckham Jr., and Mike Evans in Tampa, guys who can go up and get that jump ball, he can go right up with them. This dude's got a freakish vertical leap. I mean, and for anybody out there who doesn't know what 44-inch vertical leap is, okay, he can be standing, let's put it in basketball terms, he can be standing underneath the basket, jump, and touch the top of the backboard. I'm not talking about the top of the little square that you throw the lamp off, top of the backboard. That's how much of a freak this dude is. And I was screaming at the television. I was, you know, I as soon as they picked him, I cracked another beer and was like, oh, my God. And then I calmed down and I said, you know what? Looking at him now, no question. This dude's a star in the future.
Yeah, I agree with you. I got, 4 minutes to work with here, so I'll kind of rattle it off here. He's 22.
You've got
he's a young rookie. Oh, all right, cool. So he's 22. He's a young rookie. That's my favorite kind of rookie. I don't want the 24-year-old who stayed and got his master's. No offense. I want the young guy because every year that they stayed extra in college is one less year on their life in the pros. So I'm a dick when it comes to that. He's 22, 190, 199, 6. They listed him at 6'1". I'll give him the inch, whatever. If we're doing Russell Wilson at 6 feet when we know he's 5'10", then I guess we can give this kid 6'1". All right, 4 points.
I even thought Russell Wilson listed at 6'2" once. I almost smacked somebody. But anyway, yeah, keep going.
Yeah, that's a joke. He's at a 4.36 40 time. That's pretty fast for a corner. I love it. Athlete, high IQ, versatility. You said it. Cornerback or safety. Who cares? We need them all. So I got this guy as a week one starter, period. Whether it's at safety, corner, I don't care. We're week one starter. He will be a starter. He's a workout warrior. He's got that reputation through college players, coaches, even the combine. You saw him. He was the draft combine top performer in all of the above. Ready? Vertical jump, 44.5 inches. Broad jump, that one that he broke the record on, 147 inches. The three-cone drill, 6.78 seconds. The 20-yard shuttle, 3.94. And the 60-yard shuttle, 10.98. So he led the draft in five categories, except for that, the coveted 40 time. But a 4.36 is nothing to, that's nothing to, tilt your nose up at. So, fact of the matter is, I give him a star. I give him a big star. I think he's going to be a major, major player for this team now and in the future.
Yeah, I mean, I think he'll be – I don't know if I call him week one starter just because we have all that money tied up in Carr and Skandrick. I don't know, but I think he's more of a future player for sure. I mean, what makes
I'm calling it, man. I'm calling it. Well, I'm telling you right now, he's going to beat out Carr and Skandrick because of the fact that they got Carr and Skandrick looking at him with their mouths open while he's catching a ball 3 feet in the air. The kid's a freak. He's intelligent. You said it himself. He has a very high IQ. He did an internship working in, I think, Capitol Hill. He's working with politicians, so that he's well-spoken. He's intelligent. You know who else is well-spoken, annoying, but intelligent? Richard Sherman. Big mouth, but he's got a great education, a great football mind, and he's pretty athletic. This guy right now could beat Richard Sherman in athletic in every freaking category because the guy's bigger than Sherman, and he's a little faster. Look up Sherman's combine 40. I don't think he ran a 4.36. So the fact of the matter is, you know, am I drinking the Kool-Aid crazy? Yeah, sure, whatever. But the fact is, I love potential, and this kid has so much potential. I'm telling you right now, I would easily take him over Barry Church. I'd take him over, who do we have, Heath back there at free safety. I'd put him out at either safety as a starter. Me personally, you know, I got a problem with Carr, but okay, let's make the bad decision that I already said not to make last year, and let's just put him out there because he has the highest contract. But whatever, we'll put Carr out there, and Skandrick's obviously going to be out there because of what you just said. We gave him $9 million, whatever. But, I don't know, man. I want to see the kid out there. I want to see him up against the top-tier wide receivers. I think he's a week one starter, definitely at one of the safety spots. And I don't know, man. I'm putting Carr down in the depth chart, and I'm putting Skandrick number one, and I'm putting this kid on the other side of him.
Real quick, because I do have a few comments to do here. What did you say his cone drills and all that were? Because I'm going to read you Richard Sherman right now. Richard Sherman was a 4.56.
What 4.56? What, three cone?
Yep. No. He was a 4.56 40, 16 reps on the bench press, 38-inch vertical, 125-inch broad jump, 6.2 on the three cone, 4.33 on the shuttle, and 11.44 on the 60-yard shuttle.
Jones,
that was
really
Richard Sherman. Who's the best corner in the league?
He has him beat in every single category. So that's literally every single physical ability category Jones has him beat. Now, there's probably been a lot of athletes that have come through and that have, you know, done that, and they haven't produced on the field. So I can't buy, you know, and sell, you know, high right now. The kid needs to prove me right. But I'm just saying, man, book it. Week one starter. Somewhere on that field he's going to be starting.
Well, I agree with you in that sense. I don't think he's going to start in corner. I think that the reason why they drafted him and didn't take another corner like a Jael Collins out of – I know we have Lyle Collins. Jalen Collins would have been awesome to have too. But the reason why we didn't take guys like that, I think, is because he can play both positions. I think he starts at safety right across from Barry Church because we have the two-corner, two-safety thing now going on. I think he does that. And I think he's productive at safety. And then he moves the corner a little bit later in the year once he gets acclimated with everything. But I definitely see him starting. I just definitely see him starting week one. If he starts week one, I see it starting at safety to give a little bit of help for Carr getting burned because chances are Carr is going to get burned. So
I think they gave him the most.
Huh? No, say that again? Oh, we're breaking up here. I think I may have lost Dustin temporarily here. But we're up against it with the clock. Thank you again for listening to our 90-minute Monday here, Dallas Cowboy Monday. This was a show that we weren't necessarily planning on doing, but, you know, we did it. We brought it to you guys on holiday. So, again, thank you for that. Same time, same place. You can hear us every Monday right here at 3:30 on Blog Talk Radio. We will see you again. And before we go, we're going to play you out the right way with the Dallas Cowboy theme song. If you're not a Wiz Khalifa fan, I'm sorry, but we're going to play you out. Here we go. Not playing? No? Doesn't want to go? No? All right. I love technology. All right, we'll play this one instead. Again, this is the Stars Align. Ladies and gentlemen, we will see you same time, same place next week. Lots of topics today. Veterans running back, Jason Witten, Romo, his social media, who are the toughest opponents this week? Stars or Dustin Bork, Chris McSwiggin. We will see you again Monday, Cowboy Monday, every 90 minutes. Every Monday for 90 minutes. It definitely was a catch. We'll see you next week.